NHPR.com. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. There are all sorts of lists and rankings recognizing companies in all kinds of ways. But yesterday, four New Hampshire firms were recognized for something new as great places for breastfeeding moms. And they were Stonyfield Farm, Plymouth State University, Elliott Hospital, and Monadnock Hospital. This new annual award comes as the benefits of breastfeeding to both mother and child are ever more highlighted, and rates of breastfeeding around the country have steadily increased. New Hampshire is among the leaders in this trend, in part because of strong support for new mothers through hospitals and other programs. Returning to the workplace, however, remains a point of difficulty for some moms who want to continue breastfeeding. State laws require that employers accommodate women who want to pump milk during the workday for a year. But the rules leave some situations uncertain. One mother in North Conway has recently made national headlines by bringing a case to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission after her supervisor would not permit her to breastfeed her child directly during the workday. Because of this, Kate Frederick did not return to work after maternity leave and was soon fired. The disagreement sheds light on how gray the laws are, leaving individual employers and supervisors to decide just how much of an accommodation is reasonable. Today in The Exchange, breastfeeding in New Hampshire, coming to agreements about how to incorporate it into the workplace, as well as what hospitals and others are doing to support it. And we begin with Kate Frederick. She joins us now on the phone from North Conway. And Kate, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you so much.
Well, since all this happened to you, Kate, and as I said, you made local and national headlines, what sorts of reactions have you received from people, either positive or negative?
I've received so many positive comments, both in person and online, just really reflecting how absurd this seems to most people, that it didn't seem a reasonable response by my employer, and that it's not just a individual case. I'm learning that there's many other examples of this going on where there's not support in the workplace.
You heard stories from a lot of other people who said they could relate to your story, Kate, then.
Absolutely. I have had people confess their stories to me about discrimination.
The law says employers need to give workers the opportunity to take the time and provide a place to pump milk, but not that they need to give workers the chance to leave the office and breastfeed. You wanted to leave the office and breastfeed. Why wasn't pumping a reasonable enough accommodation, in your opinion, Kate?
Well, you know, what the law says is to express milk. It doesn't actually differentiate pumping. It says express milk. And in my case, my infant son, who was 2.5 months old at the time, would not take a bottle of breast milk or any, you know, fluid. So he needed to breastfeed in order to be fed. And the office building where I worked was in such close proximity to his daycare that it would have made perfect sense for me to just go across the street to his daycare to breastfeed him, as other employees in my office had done with their children.
So you couldn't give him a bottle. Pumping milk was not an option. He needed you there. You wanted to basically go 2 minutes away to do this, and your supervisor said, no, you can't do that.
Correct.
And what was the rationale there?
They didn't offer me a reason why, and I just went forward. I said, okay, I'll have him brought to me. Can I breastfeed him in the lactation room?
So you have a friend or relative bring him to you from daycare. Yeah, go ahead, Kate.
Or hire a person. Absolutely.
And that wasn't reasonable either?
They said no. They said, no, you can't use the lactation room for breastfeeding.
So from what I understand from news articles, and Kate, please correct me if I'm wrong, you stopped coming to work. Is that right?
Well, I wasn't able to return to work by policy. You can't return to work unless you've been medically cleared by your medical provider. So HR won't let you come back to work unless you've been cleared, like I just said. So all the medical documentation that I submitted to HR about 5 different letters from different medical providers that were giving us treatment, said I needed these accommodations. And because Health and Human Services was unwilling to accommodate any of my requests, I was disqualified from returning to work.
So you gave all the paperwork, but that didn't go through, and you were not allowed to return to work.
Well, I thought it was going to go through. I had received an email from Mark Bussiere, the director of HR, that verbatim said, "You have provided sufficient medical documentation." Okay. And then they gave me a disciplinary hearing and essentially said, "Well, we don't really have an administrative rule to fire someone when we don't, accommodate them for medical reasons."
And Kate, so, this is going to be settled, I think, or discussed, right, in your EEOC complaint. These are some of the issues that are going to be sorted out as that process goes forward. From what I understand, and your employer will give his side and so forth, and these will be hashed out. What do you hope comes out of all this? From what I understand, there's a bill in the legislature that's going to talk about this issue based on your case. Is that right?
Absolutely. One point that I have found that's not specific to my case, though, is that a lot of times employees are offered the option to resign in lieu of being fired. So that was one thing that I went through. And so that led me to this new bill. It's called Devin's Bill.
After
Live
your
free
son.
And breastfeed.
Yeah. Devin's and, Bill, Live Free and Breastfeed.
Yes. And what happened was, this wasn't my idea initially. I had been contacted by a legislator that asked me to help him draft a bill for additional protections for breastfeeding. So I went ahead and drafted a bill. We had 1 week to do this before the deadline to submit it. And I met with him. It's Ed Butler's
right.
name. And we've gotten 2 other co-sponsors on the bill, and we had a meeting last Sunday, and it looks like it's going to be moving forward.
All right. Well, Kate, thank you very much for being with us.
Well,
we really appreciate
you.
It. Bye-bye.
Great. Bye.
That's Kate Aber-Frederick, again, mother of a young son, has filed a complaint against her employer with the EEOC for what she feels was a lack of accommodation to breastfeed in the workplace. And this hour on The Exchange, we're going to look at breastfeeding practices and policies these days as more moms do it. And like Kate, many more of them are working. Let's hear from you. As these numbers grow, what sorts of issues do you see coming up, either out in the general public or in the workforce? Have you yourself had to balance work and breastfeeding? Also, did you choose not to breastfeed? Why and what sort of a reaction did you get? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. We have 3 guests who've been looking at these issues for a long time. With us in studio is Lisa Sarois, State WIC Breastfeeding Coordinator, liaison to the Division of Public Health for the Department of Public of Health and Human Services. Lisa, thanks for coming in. Good to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Becky Dunn, Associate Professor and Chair of Health Science at Keene State College. She studies breastfeeding. And Becky, good to meet you too, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And joining us from the Upper Valley, KJ Dell'Antonia, editor and lead blogger for Motherlode, the New York Times blog about parenting. And KJ, wonderful to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, New Hampshire gets pretty high marks when it comes to encouraging women to breastfeed from programs at hospitals and so forth. But then, KJ, lots of moms go back to work. And as we've heard, it can get tricky. What does the law say, KJ, about what employers need to do and what they don't need to do?
Well, the law does require that employers of a certain size make accommodations, reasonable accommodations for women to have a place to pump. So they have to give a certain amount of time I'm not quite sure what the intervals are, and I don't think that they're legislated, that allows you to pump or express breast milk to feed the baby. They don't have to pay women for that time. They're supposed to provide a place to do it, but the ways that has played out have been tricky at best. So the law does provide something of a limit, or I'm sorry, something of a protection for women, but it doesn't really make it clear, I think, to either women or employers you know, how far this should go or what is expected or when it should start or when it should end. I think it can create some really complicated situations.
So they have to provide a time and a place. They don't have to pay for it. And some of the gray areas, it sounds like you're saying, KJ, is in this word reasonable accommodation. And boy, Becky Dunn, I'm guessing people have different ideas about what's reasonable and what isn't.
Sure. And I can't recall if the law states that it cannot be a bathroom or a restroom. But I know with the policy that was developed at Keene State College last year that was approved by the cabinet, we actually put that language in the policy that the designated space cannot be a restroom, that it has to be quiet, comfortable, secure. So the woman who is expressing milk doesn't feel as if she's going to be walked in on. Well, she's expressing milk if it's like, for example, in a conference room or if it's not a secure office location. But that's part of it, too, is to making sure that it's quiet, it's comfortable, it's a space that has access to running water, that it has an electrical outlet so the mom is able to plug in her pump and express. So and not having it be a place that's a restroom, I think, is important.
Well, you're saying to pump milk or express milk. What about actually nursing? Does it say place to nurse? Because as Kate told us, you know, she wanted to nurse her son on site, and they said no, that's not the policy.
So in our policy, yes. Yeah. So if a woman wants to breastfeed or express milk, that it can happen on the Keene State campus. So, and that policy, like I said, was created a little over a year ago by Dr. Meg Henning and Human Resources and was approved by the cabinet. And we wanted to make sure that that policy was made aware to people on campus who are returning to work who are intending to continue to breastfeed and that they know that they're coming to a supportive climate that is going to enable them to do that.
Yeah, and as we talk about some of these issues that come up, it's worth remembering, right, Lisa, that the numbers are going up nationally in New Hampshire.
Yeah, when you look at our numbers statewide for New Hampshire, almost 9 out of 10 moms initiate breastfeeding after their baby's born, which
wow.
is fantastic. But then as time goes on and they go back to work, they hit the 6-month mark, it's now down to 5 out of 10 moms. And so we know that there's some barriers in there that are creating that drop, and one of those is going back to work.
All right, and we'll talk a lot more about that after a short break, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And when you become an NHPR sustaining member, you help NHPR collect an additional $10,000. When 500 listeners become sustainers, we'll receive $10,000 from the Mackinac Foundation and cancel a day from our upcoming fall fund drive. You listen to NHPR. Now it's time to support and sustain us at NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Waste Management with a reminder to save energy by turning off unnecessary lights and recycle CFL bulbs properly when they burn out. Details at thinkgreenfromhome.com. From Geriatric Psychiatry Services at Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester, specializing in mental and behavioral health for people 65 and older, in outpatient or inpatient settings, frisbeehospital.com. And Right Networks, delivering familiar business applications to companies of all sizes, moving your organization into the cloud easily, reliably, and securely. RightNetworks.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at breastfeeding on the rise in the U.S. and in New Hampshire, and some of the issues that come up as workplaces try to accommodate moms. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. As these numbers continue to grow, widely acknowledged as a good thing because of the health benefits to mother and child, what sorts of issues do you see coming up, either out in the general public or in the workforce? Have you yourself had to balance work and breastfeeding? How hard or easy was it? Also, if you chose not to breastfeed, why and what sort of a reaction did you get because of that choice? The number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And just before the break, Lisa, you were talking about how the numbers are good in New Hampshire, especially compared to national numbers, but that it starts to drop off once women go back to work. Just talk a little bit more about that, if you could.
Yeah, so we see as our moms progress after postpartum and the baby gets a little bit older, more of those barriers just start to stack up against them. And so, number one, they have to go back to work. They're maybe looking for a childcare facility that maybe is not super supportive. And, you know, that first day after you get home, the family rallies around you and is supporting you. And then as time goes on, that support starts to trickle a little bit and things just get overwhelming for new moms. And oftentimes, breastfeeding is the first thing to go. So in the WIC program specifically, that's really what we try to do is provide that extra support for moms so that they're not feeling like breastfeeding is what they have to give up in order to gain some control back to their schedule and their life.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Becky, isn't a month or two better than nothing? I mean, you know, maybe a mom has a goal of doing it for a year, and maybe when she gets back to work, she starts to give it up after 2 or 3 months. But isn't it at least good that she did that first initial weeks of life?
Oh, absolutely. And especially during, the initial breastfeeding period. So within those first couple of hours, those first couple of days, the moms are producing a milk that's called colostrum that has such rich immunity properties in it. So even being able to provide that aspect to a newborn infant is crucially important. And then certainly it's establishing that bonding piece between the mother and baby, even if it's for a month, 2 months, 3 months, that's just as important. Whether or not a mom continues to go beyond 4 or 5 or 6 months. I mean, certainly we would love to see moms go for as long as they can, but whatever a mom is able to do within her ability is just as important. And one of the things that we found interesting in our research study that we surveyed WIC participants in the Southern New Hampshire area, we found that moms have great intentions. So for example, mothers who are currently breastfeeding, 90% of them wanted to breastfeed beyond 6 months. And what we found for mothers who had already breastfed, that only about 70% were able to breastfeed until that six-month period. So many of the mothers return back to work. They might perceive that they have an inadequate milk supply. They might be provided with the flexible breaks and the location to express milk or be able to go and breastfeed their infant, but they might not just be able to balance it all.
Yeah, you think you can make it work out, but it's tricky once you really get back in.
Sure.
But still, 70% are making it to 6 months. That sounds like a lot to me, Becky.
Right. In the sample that we surveyed, that is. It's tremendous. It's wonderful.
And KJ, I'd love your thoughts on a slightly different question. You know, as we all talk about how wonderful this is and we all know the benefits and so forth, what about moms who can't breastfeed, who choose not to breastfeed? Do we, in today's culture of pro-breastfeeding, see a backlash against moms who decide not to do this?
Well, moms write in and tell me all the time that they feel that you know, they feel, particularly mothers of a particular socioeconomic class, feel pressured to breastfeed. They feel that the other women around them are doing it, and if they've affirmatively decided not to or just can't, they certainly feel judged by that. But I've also had some very interesting women, especially lately, write in or write for me and say, look, you know, I decided not to breastfeed, and on the one hand, I feel this social pressure, but on the other hand, you know, I'm sleeping at night because my husband is taking on the bottles. I'm able to go to work every day without, and leave my baby with the expected bottles of formula or send them to daycare. And really, my life is much easier. So while I feel this judgment, I'm also very aware that things are simpler for me. I think that the truth is that while a formula feeding mom, for whatever reason, may feel judged, on a societal level, things are easier for her.
Things are easier. And, you know, frankly, if she's getting sleep and she feels like her life is more manageable, and that's worth something too, isn't it, KJ?
Absolutely. And, Laura, I'd like to also step back for just a minute and point out that one of the reasons that the United States is ranked last by Save the Children on breastfeeding support is that we don't have any maternity leave. I mean, we're focused today on the question of whether or not women are accommodated in their ability to breastfeed when they go back to work, and that's great. But the fact that we don't have an established national expectation or law surrounding when women are supposed to go back is a really important thing to think about and talk about. These breastfeeding accommodations that we're talking about here, at least on a federal level, only apply to employers with more than 50 employees. So that leaves, I'm not quite sure what it is in the state, but that leaves, you know, hundreds of thousands of women not protected by this, without a maternity leave, and, you know, really, I think struggling with, all right, the doctor is saying breastfeed for 6 months, but I'm a single mother, I have this new mother baby, how am I going to bring that off? without some time to establish it and get it going.
Yeah, and there are a lot of small employers in New Hampshire, and you look like you want to jump in there, Lisa. I mean, many, many people work at small businesses.
Yeah, and just to add to what KJ said, it's right that she's saying it only covers a certain number of women, but it also only covers women who are covered under the Fair Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor. So that's only women who work hourly. So that's leaving out our teachers. That's leaving out sales personnel. That's leaving out people that are covered under contracts. And so there really is a large number of women who aren't protected under this law. And so until we have some further guidance in more legislation that covers everyone, I think we probably will continue to see it as a struggle that moms have to sort of make that choice when they go back to work. And that's part of the work that we're doing in New Hampshire around advocacy is getting them to the point where they're confident and they're doing well in their breastfeeding. They're able to talk to their employer and sort of work it out together so it works best for both, having not have to rely on the law all the time.
All right, let's go to our listeners, and then we've got a lot more to talk about. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Heath is calling from Jackson. Hi, Heath. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much.
Sure.
I wanted to make a couple of points. I'm a breastfeeding mom. I have a good decade under my belt of breastfeeding. And I've noticed a few things change over the years. I think we are headed in the right direction as a country. I do get concerned about, you know, state and federal law not supporting mothers enough. We have lots of health initiatives, yet we fail to address right from the very beginning what could make a huge impact on maternal and child health long term, and that is beginning with breastfeeding and extended breastfeeding. You know, I go to my doctor's office, and I'm very seldom talked to about breastfeeding, even at well-child visits. It's really not mentioned very much. I don't see anything on the walls, and I wonder about people who haven't had exposure either with family members or friends, and how easy it is to just fall to formula feeding when we know it is a totally inferior way to feed a child. I don't want to judge other mothers. I think it's really important to support each other in our decisions. I have used formula in the past for my children as well when I did have the instances where I had to go to work. But I also feel that here in New Hampshire, we don't have enough laws. Every state is a little bit different, but we do have laws that say in New Hampshire that a mother has a right to breastfeed wherever she has a right to be. However, there is no provision for enforcement. I think that's a real issue.
Well, Heath, lots of issues, and let's talk about some of them. And Becky, to her last point, I think first, you know, there are laws, but not really enforcement. This kind of gets to what Lisa was saying earlier too. Most employers just want to people just want to work it out. They don't want to have to say, "Look, this is the law; you have to do this."
Sure, and I think one of the pieces that we uncovered in our research. And Heath certainly raises some great points. One of the pieces that we uncovered in our research with regard to the law, we found that 60% of the WIC participants who engaged in our survey did not realize that New Hampshire had a breastfeeding support law. So there's a piece out there where people aren't even aware of the fact that New Hampshire has policy in place to support breastfeeding mothers. And one of the other interesting aspects that we uncovered around public breastfeeding, because certainly I think what we have found, particularly in the Monadnock region, is that it's not part of the cultural norm. And you don't often see mothers out nursing their infants in public spaces. One of the things that we found was that duration was related to public breastfeeding. So mothers who were more likely to breastfeed in public would breastfeed their babies longer.
Not part of the cultural norm. Even in these days, KJ, where we hear breast is best and everybody's told that this is the best thing to do. What do you think?
Well, in some places, I would have to say that here in the Upper Valley, people breastfeeding at Starbucks or at the Dartmouth cafeteria or whatever, it's something you see all the time. So, you know, turning it into a social norm is great. But one other thing that I found interesting about Heath's point is that we're putting the onus for breastfeeding on individual mothers to some extent. You know, mother's choices and mother's decisions. And I noticed she used the word phrase, you know, it's a totally inferior method of feeding. And I have to say that I have four children, and three of them were breastfed, and one of them was not. And, you know, the youngest of them is seven now, and And you can't tell, that's for sure. But what I'd like to say that on an individual level for every individual child, breastfeeding, it makes some difference. You know, research has shown a couple of things. But what's really important is that if we could increase nursing levels as a society across the board, then we could see some real statistical drops in problems like diabetes and obesity and other things. These are they're society-wide changes that are going to make a bigger difference if we all come at this than sort of by focusing on and blaming the individual. So while I'm all for doctors talking about breastfeeding more and publicizing the laws more, I think we also need to keep our eyes on this larger societal picture, that this is not something that any one mother can do by herself.
Yeah, I'm guessing that you're right on board with that, Lisa. Go ahead.
KJ, thanks for bringing up the piece about helping to prevent chronic disease and working towards the public health aspect of breastfeeding. And back in 2010, we had this great document released, the Surgeon General's Call to Action, and she laid out 20 actions that we can take as a country to really rally around breastfeeding and support it. And it included everything from workplace support to childcare to public health programs to peer support to the healthcare to the research to national campaigns. You know, formula companies have this great advantage of millions and millions of dollars for marketing. Well, we don't have a big money bank that focuses just on supporting breastfeeding for our nation. And so that requires all of us at the ground level to do that work. And so I think in New Hampshire, we really have done a fantastic job recently with our workplace support award that has come out through our task force. We're working on a child care recognition award through our task force. The WIC program is doing amazing work. Home visiting programs, health cares, hospitals. I mean, finally, we really are all coming together in our state to work together to support moms and get everyone on board, because it really does take more than just mom's decision. It's the community as well that needs to support that.
Well, and there are community health benefits as fewer children have health problems further down the road because they were breastfed. By the way, both of you and Becky have mentioned WIC. That's Women, Infants, and Children. It's like a health and nutrition program, right?
Yes.
For pregnant women and children and young children. Let's go back to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Heath, thanks a lot for that call. Brittany is in Sandown. Hi, Brittany. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I think the last two comments that the guest has said actually really speak to what I want to say, which is just that this whole debate over breastfeeding and employers providing a space for women to do that is a continuation of the assault on women's rights that we have culturally all the time. I mean, the assault on abortion clinics across the country right now. There are whole states that there aren't a single clinic in the state for a woman to go to if they need, prenatal care, or if they need access to sexual health care. And I think that it's high time that the nation caught up with this and realized that if we're going to have mothers having babies and we're going to have an economy where mothers need to go back to work, there needs to be institutionalized and legal laws and regulations and support, so that it's not left up to individual employers to decide, what's acceptable for their mother employees. And I think the one guest said something that really just hit it home for me, which is just that it's this issue is being looked at mothers as though it's their decisions. Well, that mother decided to breastfeed in public, so someone else can too. Or, that mother decided to leave her job so that she could breastfeed and someone else could do that too. But that's not, it shouldn't be left up to the mothers that way. There needs to be some unified sort of
Yeah, and I think that's what we're talking about, is what the laws are, what they say, what they don't, and how there is a lot of gray. I think I want to hear from you, KJ, first, but maybe you too, Becky. KJ, go ahead.
I think I agree with the caller that this is part of a larger question of integrating women and family into the workplace in a way that we hadn't had to do before. I lost my train of thought. She said something that really struck me. I've just completely lost it.
What? And that happens. And you've got four kids, so you're allowed. But here's another question that I had, KJ, and then I do want to hear from you too, Becky, on this. If women, especially new moms, you know, push hard for greater accommodation for companies under 50 employees who say, you know, I need this and so forth. Does a subtle bias against hiring young women emerge? I'm just wondering about that, KJ.
Well,
what do you think?
I think that is a very reasonable concern. And some of this is that we really need to reach a point where these family obligations that we all handle are a very expected and sort of casually dealt with part of our interactions with the workplace. And I think it's a legitimate concern that women have, that if there are laws that say that, you know, if a woman has a baby, she has to have 6 months maternity leave, and then she has to have all of these accommodations for breastfeeding, that there's going to be a subtle or an obvious, in you know, urge not to hire women of childbearing age. So we need not only to adjust the laws, but, you know, the more difficult point is to adjust our societal feeling about it. If we all see that work as extremely important, which it is, and if we also bring men into the picture and impose, you know, have laws regarding paternity leave and have men talking much more about their need to step out of the workplace and to come in and out and to do the things for their children, then I think that's part of what's going to begin to change attitudes. I know that I believe it's Sweden, where they've not only got a paternity law for paternity leave, but they actually essentially require you to take it. If you don't take the paternity leave, then some portion of the maternity leave is lost, I think. I've sort of lost the details.
So for dads and moms, though, not just moms.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, and to you, I think, Becky, to Brittany's point, you know, she said we need laws, not just one-on-one with your supervisor. We've been talking this hour about there are laws, policies on the books now. They may not be, you know, enough, but they do exist.
They do. And I think, you know, just to go back to a couple of other points that were being made, when we look at a woman's decision to initiate and continue breastfeeding, I think, you know, some really valid points have been raised that it's just not individual choice, that there's so many other influences that are going to sway a mother's decision to initiate and continue breastfeeding. So we need to look at what those interpersonal relationships are with regard to coworkers, family, friends, and who's there to help encourage her. One of the things that we found was that the more encouragement from family members a woman had with breastfeeding, she was more likely to initiate breastfeeding, and that it also is going to take community involvement for influence, organizational, so where they work, and then also policy. So it's basically
it's not just the individual person.
No, it's this comprehensive approach to looking at what influences health-based decisions.
Okay, well, Brittany, there's your point. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, new research on stroke rehabilitation and recovery. Then, a new book about the Supreme Court under Chief Justice John Roberts. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. Sam from Bernstein Schur, a multi-service law firm providing sound advice about labor and employment issues to large and small businesses in Manchester and at bernsteinschur.com. And Dana Center at St. Anselm College presenting International Blues Express featuring Cedric Wilson and Sidi Touré, blending music of the Bayou and the Sahara. anselm.edu/Dana. New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny today. Highs from upper 60s to around 70. Partly cloudy tonight. Areas of fog forming after midnight. Lows in the 40s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're getting an update on breastfeeding in New Hampshire, and we invite you to join us as more moms nurse their babies, and many of them are returning to work. Let's hear from you. What sorts of issues do you see coming up, either out in public or in the workforce? Have you yourself had to balance work and breastfeeding? How hard or easy was it? Also, if you chose not to breastfeed, why? What sort of a reaction did you get? We'd love your questions and comments with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Lisa Savroyce, KJ Dell'Antonia, Becky Dunn, let's go back to our listeners. And here's an email that came in from Edward, who says, I fully support breastfeeding, but I have a little concern about what I've been hearing on the radio this morning. Let's assume I own one of the many small businesses and one of my employees gets pregnant. Let's also say space is limited would present or future legislation insist that I add on the room for mothers to breastfeed? Couldn't this limit my willingness to employ people who may get pregnant? Edward, thanks a lot for that question. We touched on that a little bit earlier, but Lisa, I'd like to hear from you on that as well.
Sure. So the federal law does give a great umbrella. However, there are provisions in there that allow small businesses to be exempt. From the start, everyone's expected to meet the requirement. However, if there's a hardship for a small business, then there is a process for them to go through to be exempt from the federal law. And so that's really why I was speaking about the importance of empowering women and getting them to a point where they're confident in their breastfeeding so that they can just have that conversation with their employer instead of relying just on the law. And I think it's great for moms to have that conversation and share some of the information that we know that has come out through some of the research that moms who breastfeed their babies are sick less often, so they're less likely to miss work. And the great part, too, about some of the studies is it really talks about the longevity and the happiness of those female employees when they have the support of their employer behind them to continue that breastfeeding relationship.
Still, what do you do if you run a small coffee shop and it's really a small coffee shop? I mean, and there's a young woman who has a baby and she wants to pump or breastfeed on site and you just don't have room.
Yeah, so we hear stories like that a lot from across the state, and right now there is a program that's being put together at the federal level to sort of help employers look outside the box and be creative on how to support their employers without the traditional closed room, locked door, four wall type of breastfeeding space. It doesn't have to be that complicated. It can be a guided privacy curtain for a mom to nurse. And so we've heard from a lot of businesses creative ways that they're able to do this. Pop-up tents on the farm. You know, sometimes you just have to look outside the box and do something a little more creative.
Well, Edward, thanks a lot for that email. And here's another one from Jeannie that came in. And here's her story. And Jeannie, I'm going to truncate it a little bit because this is long, but I do want to share this with our listeners. She says, back in 06, I was working at a retail store when I had my daughter. The store manager was out on paternity leave when I came back to work, leaving the assistant manager in charge. She felt that breastfeeding was disgusting, banned me from pumping in the store. In desperation, I would park behind the store and pump manually with a blanket for cover. When she discovered what I was doing, she stormed out to my car, demanded I leave. The next day, she wrote me up for indecent exposure in the workplace. In the write-up, she compared breastfeeding to pedophilia. When the write-up reached the manager, he immediately called me and informed me I had a legal right to pump in the store, gave me the use of his office, but it had been weeks and my milk had dried. The company as a whole was wonderful, removed the write-up, disciplined her, but it reminds me of the way people see breastfeeding. It is not a sexual act, but it seems that society can often see it that way. Wow, Jeannie, what a story. KJ Delantonio, what do you think?
Wow, I mean, that is an amazing story. And you know what it really speaks to is the need for us to have the conversation that we're having now, and also for all of those great accommodations and creative ideas that we were talking about for ways for women to breastfeed in the workplace. You know, I'm all for privacy, but we should be real open about what's going on behind that curtain. Not because we need people to stand around and watch us breastfeed. You know, we're not all exhibitionists, which is something we get in the comments a lot, but because we just need this to be an open and out there conversation. We've got to stop covering up what we need. We got to stop covering up what we need to do to accommodate having babies in the workplace and to accommodate being a nursing mother. We got to, you know, put that pop-up tent up proudly, I think, to avoid this sort of situation. It's so fantastic that at least, you know, they stepped up and tried to do their best. But what a shame that the result was, you know, still that she wasn't able to end up.
Yeah, that her milk dried up. Well, and to play on your words, you know, we've got to stop covering up the fact that we're nursing, as you said, KJ. On the other hand, there was a case in the Concord area a year or so ago where a mom was nursing in a local restaurant and was not adequately covering up, in the opinion of some other restaurant patrons. And they were really uncomfortable. They said, you know, look, we don't have a problem with breastfeeding, but could you be a little more discreet? I guess, you know, they felt like more was showing than needed to be showing. So what about that, KJ? I mean, nursing moms, what's their obligation to make it okay for everybody?
Well, that's a tough one. It really is, because I think you do get your one or two people who you know, sort of want to do it to show what they're doing, to exactly for the reasons that I'm saying, that we want to be, you know, we want to be out there and we want people to know that this is okay and natural and normal. But for the most part, I think most women are, you know, maybe not obsessively trying to be discreet, but certainly don't really have any desire to show off their breasts in public. So, I mean, it's a really difficult one because you could tell me that same story in a way that would make me say, oh, my gosh, those restaurant patrons were absolutely right. Or you could tell it to me in a way that would make me say, oh, they were being crazy. It's a perspective question.
Yeah, and we weren't there, so we can't say.
The more we have public nursing, the less worried I think people are going to be about the non-extremes of that.
All right, let's take another call. This is Heather in Manchester. Go ahead, Heather, and thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. And I also want to say thank you so much for this topic because I have an 11-month-old daughter, and I've been breastfeeding from the beginning. And I did go back to work part-time in a restaurant. And it's interesting to hear a lot of what everybody's saying because I usually am posted up in a bathroom stall pumping. And that's kind of as good as space as I get. But everybody... I also work in nonprofit, and they have been incredibly helpful in providing space and giving me the time to do what I took to pump. So as difficult as it's been, I've been pretty lucky. I wanted to make that point, and I also wanted to say that I'd love to hear what your panel has to say about people who say, your daughter is a year and you're still breastfeeding, and that's kind of been... an interesting thing for me to contend with. I hear, oh, she has teeth and you're still nursing. So it's interesting how people on one hand are really supportive and on another are still kind of, you know, afraid of it and don't really know about it.
Yeah, at one level, people say, hooray for you. But she's right, Becky, as kids get a little older, some people say, wow, you're still nursing an 18-month-old.
Sure. And with the American Academy of Pediatrics and the World Health Organization, they recommend breastfeeding for at least a year or beyond. And certainly the beyond part is going to be that decision that's personal to the mother and her child in terms of how long they want to breastfeed for.
Well, and some children start to bite once they get the teeth.
Well, some children start to bite as early as 4 or 5 months. So is that reason to stop breastfeeding?
Here's a Facebook comment that just came in from Laura. She says, the WHO, World Health Organization that you just mentioned, recommends exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months and to continue nursing for at least 2 years. Laura asks, why is only the first year legally protected in the workplace? Do you want to tackle that, Becky or Lisa? Because that's my understanding, too, that only 1 year is legally protected.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the research and the documentation that was provided behind the federal law for choosing that 1 year mark for the protection. However, you know, I would say to moms who get responses like that, you know, as a parent and as a mom of two girls, everyone that you come in contact to is suddenly an expert on parenting. And so they're going to have something to offer to you on potty training, on bedtime routines, on what's healthy snacks. And so breastfeeding is just one more topic that they're going to offer their advice on. And so just take it with a smile and continue to do what's best for your family.
Heather, thanks a lot for that call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Christopher in Kittery is up next. Hi, Christopher. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Great program. Great topic. I'm from Scotland originally, Glasgow, and I've been here 21 years. And in Europe, there's a far more open attitude to breastfeeding. There's far more facilities in the workplace that are basically by law for breastfeeding mothers to nurse their children. I worked in a bar downtown Portsmouth a couple of years back. And with this young lady in, her husband, and she was very discreetly breastfeeding in the corner. You know, she had a shawl over her, and this older woman come up, and she said to me, I want you to tell her to stop.
Really? Wow.
It's disgusting. And I turned around and I says to her, she says, otherwise, she says, I'm leaving. I says, well, I says, I think you're the one that's disgusting. I says, and I guess you better leave.
Christopher.
She had a word with my boss, and my boss backed me up 100%.
Yeah.
And off she went.
What a story. Well, I'm so glad you called. Thank you so much. Because this brings up generational attitudes, KJ, right? I mean, there are differences between some older folks who didn't grow up with this idea that breast is best and people who are, you know, having kids today. Go ahead, KJ.
There are absolutely generational differences, not across the board, but yes. So you get people that just aren't used to seeing this. And I think there's not a whole lot we can do other than hope for fellow employees like Christopher and, you know, be polite and just take it as, well, you know, this is the older generation. Some members of the older generation, this is how they look at it. We're, I hope, going to grow out of that as a country and move on.
Yeah, I remember with my first child, I did one of the classes that helps you prepare for childbirth. Chris didn't help me prepare at all, but that's another story. But I remember one of the gals in the class, Becky, said that her mother-in-law was really pushing her not to do this, that she felt it was sort of a less developed, you know, world thing to do, a third world thing to do, as she put it, and that it was disgusting. So there was that attitude there.
And sure, and I think that's probably even seen still in this day and age, as has been mentioned. But a part of that is the informing piece. So one of the aspects that we're working on is being sure that we inform people to initiate and continue breastfeeding. So, and that's just not moms. It's also dads. It's also mothers, mothers and grandmothers and people who are going to be involved, because women need that support system. And if they feel they don't have that support system and they have that influence that is kind of pushing them in the direction of not to breastfeed, then that's going to really make an impact on their choice. And it's really about the informing part. So if, like, for example, if a mom knows that her mother is going to be, you know, substantially involved in the care of the infant, then have that mom come to the prenatal classes, especially the one about breastfeeding. And if a mom is on the fence about whether or not she wants to breastfeed and her mom is telling her not to, then she's probably going to make that decision not to do it.
Wow, Christopher, what a story. Thanks a lot for calling in. And Michelle's in Newington. Hi, Michelle. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question and a comment. The comment is, I have three sons who are in their late teens, early 20s, and the youngest who I breastfed the longest, 2 years, is by far the healthiest, and he's a little taller than his brothers, much to their chagrin. And the one who I breastfed the shortest, for other reasons, is the least healthy. Whether that's obviously anecdotal, but it's interesting for me to see that correlation. And the question is, my husband and I own restaurants in Portsmouth, and I would like to post something, a sticker, a poster that says we are 100% behind breastfeeding mothers and let them know that they're welcome and they should be comfortable sitting in the chairs or the booths and breastfeeding, rather than me, you know, having to, like, give them the big thumbs up every time I see them, which is, I think, a little embarrassing for
them.
Well,
you could put a sticker in your window.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you could do that. It's your business, Michelle, right?
Yeah, but I think that it would be nice if, you know, we have the ribbons in support of everything. Why not come up with a sticker or a poster that every business could post and say, you know, we're comfortable having you do this here. That's a way of societally supporting the breastfeeding in businesses. If some breastfeeding the La Leche lead or somebody could come up with a sticker or a poster that we could put in our businesses, then I think it would help the mothers to say, yeah, look, I'm comfortable doing this. And the other patrons should know that, well, you know, when you're eating your meal, it should be okay for the baby to eat its meal too.
Well, Michelle, let me ask you a super quick question because we're getting to the end. This did come up, as I said earlier, in a local restaurant, and more than one patron did feel uncomfortable. So how do you make sure that patrons who, you know, are a little uncomfortable, that the mom is doing it in a way that others feel is appropriate? I have a teenage boy, for example, and I would appreciate it if a nursing mom, you know, covered up adequately while she was in a restaurant that I was in.
So my question is, why are you uncomfortable with the breasts being shown a little bit for the baby? We see breasts in the media for advertising all the time, but then when breasts are used for their proper purpose, people get uncomfortable. You know, I mean, I'm sure your son is not uncomfortable looking at Victoria's Secret catalogs, right? But to see a breast being used for the proper purpose. So I think really it's society has to get up to speed and relax a little about this, the prurient interest in breasts should be reduced. And I would say the customer, look away. It's just like, if I don't like your radio show, I'm going to turn the radio off.
Yeah.
So if you don't like this mother breastfeeding, don't look at her. She has every right to sit there and I agree that I don't think that anyone should be flaunting their breasts, but I also don't think that women should wear, shirts that their nipples are almost showing. So that's just my business, and I'm not going to tell somebody to wear a higher cut shirt.
All right. Michelle, and I got to wrap you up because we're near the end of the hour. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. And Lisa, what about this idea? She wants to be, recognized as a place that's very friendly to breastfeeding.
So Michelle, I would encourage you to go to our New Hampshire Breastfeeding Task Force website. We have a great new recognition program that allows employers to submit an application and really give a yahoo for themselves that this is what we're doing to support breastfeeding moms, and we'll recognize you.
Yeah, because you just gave out that award this week to four companies recognized as great places for breastfeeding moms. This has been real interesting, folks. I want to thank all of you for joining us. KJ, thanks a lot for being with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
KJ Dell'Antonia, editor and lead blogger for Motherload, the New York Times blog about parenting. She's based in the Upper Valley. Becky Dunn, it was great to meet you. Thank you.
Good to meet you.
Becky Dunn, associate professor and chair of health science at Keene State College. She studies breastfeeding. And Lisa Savoy, thank you also for being here.
Thank you.
Lisa Savoy, state WIC breastfeeding coordinator, liaison to the Division of Public Health for the Department of Health and Human Services. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteers are John Barrett and Alan Cohen. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The U.S. Department of Energy hears from Granite Staters in packed public hearings on the Northern Pass Project. Former 1st District Congressman Republican Frank Ginta says he wants his old seat back, and a beloved tradition turns tragic with the deaths of two cyclists during the 40th annual Seacoast Century Ride. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
This is NHPR 959. Good morning. The Diane Rehm Show next at 10. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress and Bedding Showroom in Kittery, Maine. Everything made from organic and sustainable materials. Also on the web at thecleanbedroom.com. And from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Strokes kill an estimated 130,000 Americans a year, but quick access to medical treatment can and does save lives. Stroke survivors can face any number of physical and cognitive disabilities, including losing the ability